Welcome to the Happy Highly Sensitive Life podcast, where we talk about building a life that lights you up as a highly sensitive person. In this show, you'll feel like you're sitting down with a friend who's here to help you unlock your energy, find the work you're designed to do, express your true self, and follow your heart. It's time to shift the conversation about sensitivity. In this space, your feelings are always valid. A joyful life and work you love are meant for you, and the possibilities are endless.
If you're an HSP, an empath, or someone who loves an HSP or empath, and you're looking to understand your relationship better, this episode is for you. For the very first time, my spouse, Adam, is joining me on the show. During the pandemic, I unexpectedly discovered that he is an empath who strongly feels the emotions of other people. We talk about how I made this discovery and how it gives Adam many strengths and also contributes to perfectionism and people-pleasing that leaves him worn out. We talk about what Adam discovered when he took Elaine Aaron's HSP quiz for the first time and how his results differ from mine, and about how my HSP overstimulation shows up during long family events and means I need time alone, and how in my urgency to get time by myself, I'm very much not a people pleaser. Adam talks about how he makes sense of my HSP overstimulation, and I talk about my perspective on Adam's people pleasing and how I'm learning to be patient with his perfectionism. This episode is inspired by questions from you, the listeners, about being in a relationship with an HSP and empath. Let's go to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Nestled in our closet, I'm sitting on an end table. You're on an ottoman.
It's our sound studio.
This is our sound studio.
Let's make it sound official.
We got questions and requests for you to be on the show. The people want to know and to hear from you, your perspective on how you can support your partner who is an HSP or an empath. And so that's what we're going to talk about today.
That sounds fun.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, good. So I think it's good to just start by sharing the story of how we met, because I think it's a good one. I may be a little biased, but
I think everybody should think how they met. It's a good story.
You're right. It is true. It is true.
Most people probably think it's a good story.
Yes. So we were born in the same hospital, Fairfax Hospital in Northern Virginia, and we grew up about 15 minutes from one another.
Yes.
Went to different high schools. And when we graduated, we both went to Virginia Tech.
We did.
And you were 1 year ahead of me.
Yep.
And
I broke it in for you.
Yeah. The whole time we were there, we never met.
So recently we were down there for an alumni event, and we realized your freshman dorm was right across from my sophomore dorm. I mean, we could probably throw a rock from window to window is how close we were.
Yeah. So you played soccer at Virginia Tech.
I did.
And you like to imagine that I went to all your games, although I'm not sure that I even went to one.
But you probably never went to any, just like everybody else.
So we were both sociology minors, and maybe we had classes together, but we don't know that. We will try to get our transcripts to match them up and see if we did have classes together.
We should do that.
That for sure. Yes.
Maybe we sat next to each other in a class one time and we didn't even know it. But you never went to class. You skipped class all the time.
Okay. That's another story for another day. I did go to class, just not on Fridays.
I actually missed a lot of class as well. Because of
soccer.
Yeah.
Fast track, we graduated. You went to Northern Virginia and you got married. I went to Charlottesville, Virginia, where I was going to go to VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, for my master's degree. I lived in Charlottesville. I went to class in Richmond, Virginia. And in my 30s, I ended up marrying. Both ended up divorcing right around the same time.
You moved
to Charlottesville for a job.
That's right.
And we ended up meeting online.
Yes, we did.
On Match.com.
Yes, Match.
Yes. It took you moving to my town for us to finally meet.
And we had a lot in common because the fact that you basically grown up in the same area, we just felt like we had a lot in common right away, which was nice. Yeah. And then you have the commonality of going to the same college even though we didn't know each other, we knew if we talked about something, we knew exactly where that was.
Yes. After college, you coached soccer at my old high school. That's and true. You had played on a travel soccer team in high school with a lot of guys from my high school. So we had a lot of moments where I was like, wait, do you know this person? Do you know that person?
I think while I was playing soccer, you know, like during high school with the travel team, I think one of my favorite teammates dated you.
Oh, I see.
During our soccer years or my soccer years.
Well, yes, but I have a hard time calling it dating because it was in the stage where I was silent Maria whenever I liked somebody. And so we were going together, but we actually never spoke to each other. And I think maybe in the gym, he may have tried to give me a peck and it ended up landing on my ear. And that was like the sum total of our relationship. We dated for about a year. We married in my ideal wedding ceremony, which was on my sister's front porch. We had 25 people there. And your brother officiated.
That's right. He got ordained online. He did one of those things. And he married us off. It was very emotional.
Yes. It was a wonderful day.
It's hard for him to get it out without crying and hard for us to say our vows without crying.
Yes, there were a lot of happy tears that day. Right. Fast forward, we're in the pandemic and I wanted to understand you on a deeper level. And so I had you do the 16 personality survey online. And for the listeners, if you're listening, I will link that in the show notes. It's a Myers-Briggs-based personality survey, and you came out as an INFP, same as me, intuitive feeler. So then I was learning about human design and started studying our charts, and that blew everything open for me and made me realize that I didn't really know and understand you and what made you tick before I learned about your human design. So let me just say for the listeners, human design is basically a system for understanding yourself that's more personalized and revealing than the Myers-Briggs or other systems that I've used. And one of the many things it shows is how you experience emotions. So I've been studying human design and I was learning about how sensitivity and being an empath show up in a human design chart. And I ran your chart and I was shocked to see that you have what's called an open emotional solar plexus, which indicates that you're an empath. An empath is someone who strongly absorbs and feels the emotions of others. So, and let me just give a little bit of background, then I'm going to ask you some questions.
Okay.
So in human design, the emotional solar plexus is one of 9 energy centers. And with an open emotional solar plexus, you are very aware of other people's feelings. And if you're not aware of what's occurring, you absorb those feelings and experience them in an amplified or magnified way that makes you feel pressured to make others happy, to say yes to things, that kind of thing. So I was surprised you're an empath, but I did know that you're a guy who shows his emotions. It's something that I've always loved about you. And I don't know if you remember this, but I remember the first time that we watched Seatbelt Psychic together. It was a rousing Friday night, one of our best.
Yeah. Crazy.
Crazy Friday.
Because we loved to just go out and club it up and be around tons of people. Love it.
The couch is our favorite place to be.
That's right.
But so we were watching Seatbelt Psychic together. I can't say that. Seatbelt Psychic together. And we were both getting emotional because someone was receiving a very comforting and loving message from the other side. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
I do. I just remember thinking, oh, wow, he's tearing up at this. That's unexpected. But I really liked it.
Okay.
I liked it.
That's so good. Because that's who I am.
Yes.
I'm always very weepy when I watch movies and sentimental things.
Yes. I like that. So, and then at the funeral for a family friend, we were giving condolences to the friend's daughter. And I looked over at you and you had tears streaming down your face.
Yep.
And I remember you saying, it's just so sad.
Right. And I didn't know. I guess I was amplifying her or feeling her feelings, and then it amplifies it into into myself.
Yes.
It doesn't make sense. But.
So what does it feel like to you to be experiencing the emotions of others in that way?
Before you explained why I do that, I always felt that I was a little overwhelmed by emotional experiences. But now, because I know that's who I am, I can identify it in the moment.
So how do you see it as a strength and use it as an advantage in work?
So with work, I'm in sales. And so when I'm in a sales meeting, I've always felt this. I just didn't know why. I always knew at the end of the sales meeting if it was going, if I was going to get that deal or not. I just sense it. I sensed it, but I didn't know how I could sense that. But now it explains why I can. So now I can feel if it's going well, I just continue to do what I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, this is going great. So I'm going to just keep down the same path. If it isn't going well, I'll sense it. But still, I get in some circumstances when it's like a difficult situation that we're trying to resolve as a group at a meeting. And I still feel the emotions of everybody. But now I understand why. I realize why I'm so exhausted after meetings sometimes. Even if it's a simple meeting, I come sometimes get back to my car and I'm like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, it's like those movies when people like get an out of body experience. And when they come back, they're like, whoa, and all tired. But it's only for a short time. I was like really exhausted for like maybe a couple minutes, but then I kind of regroup.
Mm-hmm. Does it make it harder to say no when you know how the other person's feeling?
Well, that comes with my wanting to be a people pleaser. So I do have a problem saying no.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what happens when you can so closely feel the emotions of other people. You can feel their wants and their desires. It also makes you an employee that goes above and beyond in your work.
Because I want to please people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're very valued because of that.
That is true.
You were mentioning before that you're in sales.
Yeah.
Can I say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure.
You're in track sales and you do project management for building and refinishing tracks.
Yeah, so we're in sports construction and we redo running tracks and tennis courts.
Yeah.
To be more specific, yeah.
I'm remembering the day that you had a track that needed to have some cracks and holes filled, right?
Right.
And normally you have a crew that would go down and do that.
That's right.
But you opted to go and do it yourself.
That's right, because we needed to get the lines repainted on the track. The crews were all tied up. There was no way for anybody else to get down there. So that was not my job description to go do the work, but somebody had to. So I just did it.
Right.
Because it was the easiest way and best for the client.
Yeah.
So I'm pleasing everybody, essentially.
Right, right.
I'm also just solving a problem.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you just solve the problem and life's easier because it's easier later if you just solve the problem now.
Right. And you know that you're going to get a good outcome.
Right.
Everybody's going to be happy with. So you spent 8 hours filling those holes by hand with a caulk gun.
With a caulking gun, yeah.
And you came out of that situation and your hand was frozen in a claw shape.
That's right.
And you couldn't feel those fingers for...
When was that? End of May? I think just a couple weeks ago, my fingers finally are not tingling at the tips.
Yeah.
Actually improved my golf game. I didn't grip the clubs as hard.
There you go. Talk about making lemonade out of lemons. Seeing the upside.
That's right.
Just transitioning here a little bit. I have what's called a defined solar plexus. So I don't quite absorb other people's emotions in the same way. And this is part of what human design shows us, is that we are each unique. So I have to be honest and say, I didn't initially understand why you kept taking on work tasks that seemed way outside of your job description of sales. And I used to be like, I don't get it. That's not your job. Just, you know, set a limit, say no, say you can't do that, push back. Now I know it was really helping to head off and prevent future messes and problems.
I don't like surprises. I want to be able to plan like a day ahead. Like I have to drive 3 hours the next day. So I'm prepared for that. I don't want somebody calling me at like 5 o'clock the day before and saying, you have to be so-and-so at 8 o'clock in the morning. But it's like a 2-hour drive to get there. You know, right. that's just not my style.
Yeah.
That'll throw me for a loop.
Right.
Yeah. I have to mentally prepare for things. I'm a control. It's a little bit of control freak. I want control of every situation that I'm in. And mm-hmm. when it's not, I get a little out of whack. Mm-hmm. Or anxious. I get anxious. That's uh-huh. really what it is. Yeah. Uh-huh. This is like a therapy session.
Yeah. Sorry. Do you ever feel like you're married to a former therapist?
I do get psychoanalyzed quite often.
Quite a lot. Quite a lot.
It's always like, well, you know why you do that.
But I've helped you learn about yourself.
You have. Well, it's hard if we're having a disagreement to really like argue with you, because I'm like, well, she knows what she's talking about, so I can't really argue at that point.
So around the house.
Yes.
Because you want things done proactively rather than reactively, how does that impact how you do things around the house?
Well, it makes me end up doing a lot more things because I want them done a certain way, but then it also takes longer to do things.
Let's talk for a minute about our differences about how we approach things around the house.
Okay.
I remember the first time that we were trying to do a household task together where I was like, whoa, we have very different styles here. We were trying to change the sheets on a bed.
Yes.
And I very quickly realized that you had a very specific process for how to change the sheets. You were like measuring where the sheets were.
There was no tape measure involved.
My philosophy for making a bed is slap it on, make sure everything's tucked in like it needs to be, and move on. I want it to be done as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. And you are very precise about it.
You want to cut the corners.
It feels like an eternity.
5 minutes, you know, and I'm like, well, maybe like 4 extra minutes. You can make it perfect.
It feels like an eternity to me while I'm waiting. So then the second situation was
when I was moving from my apartment to move in with you for the first time.
Yes.
Take apart my bed frame. Yes. And you just wanted to just rip it off. But like there was a process you had to do.
And I wasn't aware of the process. Yes. I'd never moved with you before. And so I hadn't seen this kind of methodical approach to things.
Yeah, there's a process for everything.
Yes.
And the reason why I do the process is more of I want to avoid the worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that probably could happen? So you want to take the steps. So if I do this and do this and do this, that's going to avoid that. Right?
Right.
Because it makes life easier. You don't have surprises. So if you do everything, just take a little bit more time.
Do you think it's fair to say there's an element of kind of perfectionism behind all that?
Yeah. And then a little bit of OCD, if you lump OCD into all this, if that's part of this.
I just want to be honest about the fact that I had some reactions to the perfectionism. I felt like you were trying to micromanage how I loaded the dishwasher and how I cleaned the bathroom. One of the things we kind of ended up doing is saying, okay, if you have a very specific way that you want to do it, then I'm going to let you do it and be in charge of those tasks. But eventually I got to the point with the dishwasher that I could see how your ways of doing things can become kind of cumbersome to you.
Right, because I don't have the ability just to go, oh, that's good enough. Let's just get it going. I want to pack it perfectly and make sure everything's angled properly so nothing has water pooling in it and nothing would potentially fall down to the bottom and get caught or melted. Right. Just extra careful. Once again, trying to avoid that worst case scenario.
So one of the things that I noticed is that your process with the dishwasher felt so cumbersome that you would get stuck and like procrastinate on running the dishwasher.
That's right.
And so then I started to have a change of heart at that point about my position, that I needed to find ways to be helpful to you so that it would be less cumbersome, because I could see how the stress of it was.
And that's why I am I'm a bit of a procrastinator.
Yeah.
Because to do projects, there's a lot more steps involved, and it takes longer to do maybe what some might think is a simple project. But mm-hmm. to me, that's like, man, there's a lot of steps involved there. So then I do end up procrastinating.
So I do a quick overview of the kitchen, getting things, throwing things out, putting things away, putting away the food, having everything ready. And so when you're cleaning up, all you're doing is loading the dishwasher. And you've gotten to the point where we can run the dishwasher relatively quickly now.
Mm-hmm.
We basically just decide we're going to send it through a cycle. It's going to be good enough with whatever's in it.
Right. So now I'd just be like, all right, that's good enough. It's better to have them all done and put away.
So I was kind of resisting. I was feeling micromanaged because you wanted these things done in a way that was very different for me. One of the other things that we discovered through human design is that I am what's called a manifesting generator. And this was very helpful to learn about. A manifesting generator wants to invent better ways to do things and find shortcuts to get things done fast and may skip steps along the way. About 35% of the world is a manifesting generator. You are a generator, which means your energy wants to master what you do and you're methodical. That's about 30% of the world is a generator. I very distinctly have a tendency towards being extremely impatient about things because I want to get things done fast. That's like part of what I'm here to do is invent new ways to approach things.
That's why I think this human design thing is so spot on. So right. It helps me understand you more. That's just you. You're not doing it on purpose to make me mad.
And I try to give you space to do a task the way you like to. I bring a book. Or like if we're out doing something, I have ways to let you go through your process so that my impatience does not get in the way with your process. There are times that I kind of do hold up the mirror and I'm like, you know, this seems to be making you more stressed. Is there another way to approach this? There's one other thing that I've noticed, and actually you told me this early on, and that is how you respond so well to positive reinforcement.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Is that part of my human design and being an empath?
Well, it makes sense if you like to please people, that if people positively reinforce you, that you would be happy about that. I remember you telling me early on how your mom used to brag to her friends.
Family when they visited.
Yeah. To her family.
Yeah.
About what a good vacuumer you were. And it made you take even more pride in your vacuuming. And I have seen this happen. We had a very organized kitchen towel drawer, and my sister came over and was like, wow, this kitchen towel drawer is so well organized, so neatly folded and color coordinated. And Adam was like, that was me.
And now I have to do it that way every time.
I'm yes, like, because you want to get a pat on the back.
Like if people haven't been coming over a lot since the pandemic, but next time they are in the house, that drawer is going to be perfect. It's going to make them happier to see
it's gonna make them happy.
Organized. But let's not kid each other. I am very disorganized in other places in the house and in my life, like my desk.
Uh-huh. I think you have a theory about that, though, right? That you're so much energy is going into other areas and making sure other areas stay orderly that it can make it hard to keep other areas.
That's right. Yeah.
That are less important.
There's only so much space.
What advice would you give to someone who's in a relationship with an empath, someone who's a perfectionist?
Well, I think you said it with your idea about, well, I know he has to do things a certain way. And so it might take a little longer than you expect. So you prepare for that with maybe like a book, or you're going to write because you know Adam's going to take a little bit longer doing something. I got to wait around for him. What is that? That's acceptance.
Uh-huh.
You're not yelling at me and trying to tell me to change and do it differently. You're finding a way to just accept the person how he is and also enjoy being around the person. You're finding a way to cope with it.
Right.
Instead of being frustrated all the time, like, why can't that person do that? Why does he do this? And that's why the human design thing is so great, because it just gives you a better understanding of why people do things.
Right. Right. When you first heard me talking about human design, you thought that this was some woo-woo, newfangled, bizarre kind of system.
Of course.
Yeah. You were very skeptical.
Yeah. You're like,
and
yeah,
I was like explaining some things to you about yourself and you were like, oh my gosh. And especially like the intuition piece. Like I told you that you're very intuitive and you were like, oh, that's absolutely right. Yeah. I know if someone's about to call me.
Right.
And so I know that I need to call them first.
Yeah. If I want to head it off.
Yeah. Because they're about to call me. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When you talked about the results of my chart, the skepticism went away because it was like, Well, that resonates with me. And I actually tell everybody at work.
I know you have.
I'm like, you guys have to do this. And
so speaking of taking online quizzes, so this is my lead in to talking about the Elaine Aaron HSP quiz, because after hearing and seeing that you were an empath, I was like, okay, you've got to do this Elaine Aaron HSP quiz. There was nothing in my mind that had me ever consider that you may be an HSP until or seeing your human design chart. Mm-hmm. And I will put the link to this quiz in the show notes for anyone who's listening that wants to take a look at it. But the first time you took it, you told me that you had 11 positive responses on it. And then you took it a second time and you had 14.
I think it was 13.
13?
Mm-hmm.
13 positive responses. Mm-hmm. Okay. Elaine Aarons, who's an HSP researcher, says that you're an HSP if you have 14 or more positive responses, and men tend to have slightly fewer. So this started this conversation about whether or not you may be an HSP. And part of the conversation that we've been having is the fact that you don't get overstimulated by sensory stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? So loud noises, caffeine, the kinds of things that leave me very overstimulated don't leave you overstimulated. So that's one of the differences.
Mm-hmm. Most of the things I said no to are the noises.
Uh-huh.
Being very hungry creates a strong reaction in me. And that's not really true.
So let's talk about overstimulation. I do get overstimulated. When was the first time you really saw my overstimulation?
Yeah, that was my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. I'll call it the event. For them and for us, probably.
Uh-huh.
My brother splurged and he rented a limo and we met at his house, and then we went in the limo and picked up my parents in the Northern Virginia area. It's close to DC. So the idea was to go down and look at the Christmas decorations, because it was Christmas time, and then go to a nice dinner. But in the limo, packed into a limo with two loud teenagers and a loud brother and people singing and stuff. So
uh-huh.
on the way down, there's loudness, long 2-hour dinner, lots of loudness, busy restaurant, lots of noise. And then on the way back, it was like over the top loud, just
right.
with Christmas carols. And I think we were in that limo for like 2 hours on the way back, because we cruised around DC to look at the Christmas lights and things.
Uh-huh.
And then I think we took my parents home and then back to my brother's.
Right.
And it was just, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was, I was having a grand old time, and we were singing Christmas carols, which I love. I think there was a little bit of a dance music going on at the end too.
Uh-huh.
But you,
I don't know, because if I could have held two pillows up on either side of my head, I would have. And I just want to say that I love your family.
Yeah, that's right.
I love the energy of your family. I love being with your family. And on this particular day, to me, it felt like we were doing this event for no less than 10 hours. I swear, like, even as we talked about this story, I'm like, I swear we were together doing this for 10 hours. And it felt to me like there were nine people or eight people in that limousine? To me, I felt like there were 300. And all of them were singing at the top of their lungs to Christmas carols and all of that. By the end of it, I was done.
A tangled mess.
That was it.
And I didn't realize this. We got back at about 11:30, and Mario goes straight up to the guest bedroom. I'm like, whoa, we got to open presents. She's like, no, can't. First, I was like, are you sick? No, I'm not sick. And I was like, well, just come downstairs. It's okay. Let's just get this done. But but you really, because you're HSP, you just didn't have that ability to do that.
Right. And when I'm overstimulated like that, I feel like I'm like my throat actually gets tighter. I feel like I'm filled up to the brim. Sometimes I think of it as feeling like I'm a glass of water that is so full, another drop cannot go into it until I've had that time to decompress and kind of reduce the sensory overload. And I get extremely exhausted and I have a hard time focusing on what's happening. Like if you were to tell me something important at that moment, I would not absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
I start avoiding eye contact because I'm just trying to block out the sensory stimulation. I am not resourceful in that moment at all. And I am also really not a people pleaser. Like in that moment, I'm like, every man for himself. I got to go do my thing. I got to be by myself. I just knew what I needed in that moment. And that I was, they're just like, I couldn't push through that.
But the funny thing is, I did convince you to come down.
Oh my God. I like and that was, held on by a thread.
I'll tell you what, that was a mistake. I was like, yeah, she should go back up. And I think you stayed down for like 10 minutes and we were all like, Mario, you just go ahead and go back up. We're all like, all right, that didn't work out.
you could see that there was like no pushing it.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't going to be very happy to be around at that moment. Yeah. It's like, I had nothing to give.
We hadn't really experienced that before, but just because it's new doesn't mean it's bad. Right. Uh-huh. And so we just accepted that's who you are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's kind of the crux of it, really.
Now, before you got to this acceptance phase, though, I think there was this phase where you were like wondering, because you are making decisions based on making people happy.
Yes.
Like that people pleasing is kind of part of how you approach things.
Mm-hmm.
You were wondering why I couldn't just suck it up and.
That's true. Yes. That was going through my mind that day. I was like, why can't you just, because I was thinking that that's what you're supposed to do. You have to please people.
Right.
Right.
So and you,
we're wired differently that way.
Right. And you really are trying not to ruffle any feathers. We were coming from different perspectives there. And then there was another situation. There was a family funeral on your mom's side of the family.
Yes.
And we traveled for about 4 hours in the car to mm-hmm. North Carolina.
Yep.
And when we arrived at the ceremony venue, we had time to stop and go to the bathroom, but then we went straight in and lined up with the family to process down into the chapel.
Yes.
And so our first, you know, kind of walk in was with this procession where people were seated all around us. And then we went and we took our seats. And of course, it was an emotional ceremony. Then we went and we did a family, greeted the family and had a mini reception. And then we went back to the hotel and there was another family gathering that was in a very small hotel reception area. I was so overstimulated from the events of earlier in the day, walking into this room that was full of people talking and carrying on and telling stories and all that was really overstimulating for me. And I know that you were, again, feeling like, why can't I just, you know, kind of make it work out? You really wanted me to be in there.
We checked in the hotel, went up to the room, and you just said, hey, I need some time. I was like, at that point, I was like, that's fine. I was like, can you please come down for dinner? I think that's what you did. I think you came down a little bit later for dinner.
Yeah, I snuck out early and I went back up to the room because I was not going to make a good impression at that time.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that you have since discovered is that it's not worth trying to force me to do those things because the back of my mind, all I'm thinking is get those people the heck away from me. I need to be by myself. And that is not going to make the impression that you want it to make anyway.
That is true.
So I think you've started to realize that there are times you need to release that.
Yes.
Inadvertently, I think I send out these vibes that people need to leave me alone.
Yeah.
And those aren't vibes you're trying to have in that moment.
Now I've reframed it like it's not that big of a deal, right? If that's what makes you happy and that's what you need, you just go up to the hotel room. You don't have to be there. Or you don't come to the trip. I didn't understand. There's nothing you could do about that. It wasn't like you could make that decision to switch that off, right?
Mm-hmm. As an empath, you really feel and you imagine what other people want you to do. And you imagine that they'll be very disappointed if you don't do it. Your desire is to pass that on to me, right?
Yep.
It's like, I'm your spouse, so I also have those same expectations of me.
Right.
But I have a different comfort level because I'm not a people pleaser. My comfort level is different. In my mind, at those moments, what I'm thinking is they don't care whether I'm there or not.
You say they didn't care if you were there, but I think they truly did care if you were there and it would be pleasurable for you to be there if you weren't exhausted.
They would find it pleasurable for me to be there, not me finding it pleasurable to be
there. Well, right. And that's the difference where it's like I'll go do things like that because I know that person will find pleasure in it. Even though I might really just want to be tired and go up and watch TV. And that's the difference of how you're designed. And it's not wrong that you do that. And that's what I've learned to accept through just learning you. Everybody's different and they're designed a certain way for a reason. And you just have to learn to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
When there is differences like that in your relationships with your spouse, you have to do a lot of accepting. And it's, but accepting is hard sometimes when you don't understand why the person is doing what they're doing.
Right.
And if you can learn that they aren't doing it on purpose to make you mad, that's just how they're designed.
Yeah.
It just makes it easier to accept.
Right. Wanting to understand is the thing that led me down this path in the first place. Mm-hmm. Giving you the 16 personalities and then doing the human design and looking at your human design chart and then looking at having you do the HSP quiz to see your results on that. It's all been about just trying to better choose how I'm going to react to it. I can kind of give you the benefit of the doubt about it more.
Yeah. And it goes both ways. Me understanding you and now you're like, why does he do that?
Yeah.
But there's a reason for it.
Right, right. And of course, you know, when we're both really stressed out, it's harder to do that. If we're both feeling worn out or stressed or not centered, it's harder to do that. We're a work in progress with it.
Sure.
A few weeks ago, we went to Virginia Tech for your soccer reunion. And I woke up on Saturday morning and we were supposed to go to a tailgate event together. And I was like, what I really need to do right now is to go for a walk in the woods by myself.
Right.
And for me to drop you off at the tailgate and you do that by yourself. And you were like, okay, good. Yeah. And so I went and walked in the woods. I was a little surprised that you weren't like, you have to come, you have to come.
Well, that's an awesome example of how I felt being able to reframe it. And I'm like, that's cool. And I do, I reframe it a little bit. Like, really, is that, you know, I would like everybody to meet you, but, you know, that's what you needed to do. You wanted to go for a walk because you're not a big drinker. You're not, you know, hanging out at tailgates isn't your thing. So
doing that walk was everything for me and really got that trip back on track for me. When I'd woken up feeling kind of out of sorts and like I hadn't slept well. And I was telling you that I was really grateful that you were like amenable to us going and doing our own thing. And you had said that you knew that it was going to be uncomfortable for you if I was there and I was miserable being there.
Right.
So it was just better for you to be like, go do your own thing. Go take your walk in the woods. You ended up staying at the tailgate for less than an hour. I think it had broken up. Right. So we ended up meeting up on the walking trail and then we went and explored around campus and we didn't want to go to the football game.
Right.
So that felt like good progress. I think the thing that I learned from all this is that, wow, I thought I knew you, but I didn't really know you until I looked at your human design. And that's when I started to really understand what made you tick. I mean, I knew that I liked your energy and your values and your honesty, your integrity, all of those things. Your lightness and your fun and all that. But I didn't really get what made you tick until we did this, which is pretty eye-opening. If you're listening to this and you're curious to learn whether you and your partner have an open emotional solar plexus, you can run a free human design chart by going to geneticmatrix.com. I'll stick a link to that in the show notes. You'll want to have your birth date, birth time, and birth country, city, and state with you when you do that. And when you see your human design chart, you'll see 9 geometric shapes or energy centers. And the emotional solar plexus is the triangle on the far bottom right. And if your emotional solar plexus is white, that means it's open. That means you take in the emotions of other people. If it's defined, that means you don't. There are other markers in the chart, though, that may indicate that you absorb the energy of other people. And I'm going to talk about those markers of sensitivity and empathy in the human design chart in a future episode. So this is really just one of the ways that being an empath shows up in the human design chart. If you haven't done the HSP quiz with your partner, have them do it to see where they land with it.
I was surprised how many things I said yes to.
Right. You're kind of on the cusp.
Yeah.
So, Adam, I'm really grateful to you for being here. There's so much pressure and socialization that men receive to kind of hide their emotions. And there's a certain characterization that we have in our culture about men and emotions. And so I think it's really helpful and important that you're willing to talk about your feelings and being an empath. And I think it does a service to other men. Thank you for sharing this part of yourself.
You're welcome.
With our community.
You're welcome. It was very fun. We should do it again sometime.
If you have a question for me about something you heard on this podcast or want to suggest a topic for a future episode, email me at questions@happyhighlysensitivelife.com. If you'd like to receive regular news from me, sign up for my email newsletter by following the link in the show notes. You can also connect with me on Instagram at @happyhighlysensitivelife. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, leave a positive comment, and rate and review it. Bye now!